So I'm going to tell you a little story first, then I'm going to go to questions, and then we're going to go into 10 and 11, and I think this session lasts till 10:20. I remember looking at this morning. That's Saturday. Let's see. Yeah, so this will be till 10:20, and then we'll take a 10-minute break and go for another hour. Okay, so, you know, one of the things I talked a lot about my ankle this weekend, and it's really amazing to me how, like, my ankle kind of mimics my recovery. So 7.5 years ago, you know, I said, I'm walking my dog. She zigs, I zag. I look down, my foot's facing 180 degrees the wrong way. I go to the hospital, and it is explained to me that I have a twofold injury. Number one, that the outside bone on my leg, well, I don't even know what it's, fibia, tibia, one of those things, broke in half, and that I ripped every muscle and tendon in my body. I mean, my ankle. And they explained to me, you would have done that skateboarding, but I just didn't. But they told me that the larger aspect of my injury is the tendons and the muscles. That was why I would not be able to walk possibly. But the first thing I had to do was have surgery, because that bone had to be put back together with screws and plates, and that support had to be there in order for me to address the larger aspect of my injury, which was the muscles and the tendons. That is the same exact thing with our disease. We have a twofold illness. We have an allergy of the body, and we have the mental obsession. The mental obsession is the larger aspect of our disease. But until I am clean of my foods, I don't have the stability to address the larger aspect, which is the mental twist. I was also told by this doctor that it was going to take me 12 months to recover, and whatever I didn't do in that 12 months, I was never going to get back. So I would go to that doctor 30 days later and say, why aren't I better? Because I told you it's going to take 12 months. And I would go back 60 days later, why aren't I better? Because I told you it's going to take 12 months. How many of us in OA do step one and go, why aren't I better? I've been absent for 30 days. Because we have 12 steps and you have to finish them. How many of us do the first three steps and go, why aren't I better? Because we won't recover till we do all 12 steps. It's going to be a painful and uncomfortable process until we get to that 12th step. And so many of us want to feel better right away. I had to be willing to walk through the uncomfortability of that ankle in order to recover from my ankle injury. Another experience is I wound up going after, you know, the cast was off and the bone was a little bit more stable and I started going my physical therapy. I went to physical therapy 3 days a week and I always saw the same people. And one time I said to the physical therapist, I said, I'm really kind of confused. It seems like some people are getting better and some people don't seem to be getting better. And he kind of smiled at me and he said, Kim, it's pretty obvious to us that you are doing your homework between the physical therapy appointments. And it's pretty obvious to us that some people are not. So I just want to mention that, because as jazzed up as everyone is this weekend, it's not this weekend that's going to allow you to recover. It's what do you do with that information? Your sponsor is not going to make you recover. It's what you do between those visits with your sponsor that's going to allow you to recover. You have to create that own experience with the work, the same way that my recovery was based on the fact that I did those exercises consistently between those physical therapy appointments. Does that make sense? Okay. So now let's go through some questions. How do you feel about alcohol during your program? So I'm guessing you mean drinking while you're going through the steps. I am not an alcoholic. However, I have an allergy to sugar. So I do not drink alcohol because of the fact, not that I think I'm going to have a couple glasses of wine tonight and be drunk, but if I have a couple glasses of wine tonight, maybe not even tomorrow, but by the next day, I'm going to suddenly notice the Dunkin' Donuts signs. Because the allergy has been triggered in me because of the sugar that is going to, my body is going to start to crave the sugar, not the alcohol. So it's not about whether you can drink alcohol during your recovery. You have to be real clear on what your allergic substances are. If one of your allergic substances is sugar, you can't drink alcohol. Alcohol, the fermentation process is done through sugar. If you're not allergic to sugar, can you have alcohol? Absolutely. But you have to be real clear about what your allergic foods are. Okay? What are your ideas for maintenance of weight once you reach your goal? I have no idea. That's why you have to talk to a nutritionist, talk to your doctor. You know, and this is just my experience again. In my area, there were basically two ways of doing OA. One was OA and one was HAL. And I remember going to HAL meetings, and someone who was 4'10" was given the same food plan of someone who was 5'10". Made no sense to me whatsoever. Somebody that is running a marathon and somebody who sits at a computer all day for 12 hours, how could you give them the same food plan? So I don't know what that is because I am not a nutritionist. I don't know what your activity level is. I mean, for example, with me, I went through menopause in the last couple years. I had to make changes to my food plan because my metabolism changed. And I did that with the help of a nutritionist. So my feeling is what is beautiful and what is wonderful is once you get through the steps, when you have neutrality around the food, you're much more open to what a doctor tells you. You're much more open to what a nutritionist tells you because you start to focus from trying to control the allergy to how can I have the optimum health so that I can participate in life to the fullest. But we in Overeaters Anonymous are not medical professionals, so that's why we utilize medical professionals for those type of information. Are you at your goal weight or are you maintaining? Well, my goal weight is my birth weight, so no, I am not. I think because of my Brad Pitt obsession, I've always wanted to look like Jennifer Aniston. I will not do that. I'm not able to do that. You know, I remember being in a yoga class a couple months ago, and nobody was compulsive overeaters, and everyone was talking about their bodies, and I realized, man, the stuff I'm feeling about my body is because of my age, not because of my addiction. You know, gravity sucks, people. 50 years of gravity, there's stuff that's falling down that should not be falling down at this point. So I don't ever feel that I'm going to be satisfied with the way that my body is, but my medical professionals tell me I'm at a healthy body weight. My numbers from my blood pressure to my cholesterol are very healthy, and that's what I look at. So when I hear the word normal body weight, who the hell knows what normal is? I trust medical professionals to tell me if I'm at a healthy body weight. But I don't think I'm ever going to be satisfied with what my weight is, and I've accepted that fact. And I spent more time preparing cute outfits for this retreat than I did what I'm going to say, so that just shows you where my head's at. So, thanks. Okay, what do you do when you have food thoughts? I have to tell you that I think the last time I had a real food thought was probably 4 or 5 years ago. So, but when I have them, what do I do to not have it come from a food thought to a food obsession? The steps. I voice them. I kind of laugh at them because I now can see the connection. I remember it was probably 4 or 5 years ago. I was driving home from work. I was really stressed, and I thought, whew, if I could have a big bowl of pasta, I could chill out. And immediately thought, what the heck is that connection? A bowl of pasta with chilling out. And I was able to do a 10-step on it, and I was able to get past it. If you're talking about while you're going through the steps, what I often tell people is the food thoughts are getting less frequent and less intense. You're growing away from the food. Don't beat yourself up because you're a compulsive overeater who has a food thought. That's where we've always gone. But make sure that you're leaning into the step work, and those thoughts will become less frequent and less intense. How many face-to-face meetings do you go to? And once again, this is just personal stuff. This is not saying others. I personally just go to my home group. You know, I'm very blessed. I have a very healthy home group, and I get what I need there as far as I get people to work with. I don't go to meetings. A friend of mine said one time, I used to go to OA like a gas station. I would go there and I'd fill up and I would leave. Because I'm a recovered woman, I go to give the message. And I get that in my home group. So personally, I go to my one OA meeting a week as the teacher, and then I go to one face-to-face AA meeting as the student. Because I get a message in AA that I a lot of times don't get in OA, and I get fed in AA so I can feed other people in OA. And that's just personally how it works for me. My DUA and measure, I had answered that yesterday. Do you eat between meals? Once again, we have to look at what creates the phenomenon craving in you. For me personally, grazing was one of the things that creates the phenomenon of craving in me. So I have to have a definitive beginning and ending of meals. But when I travel, for example, I have to make different decisions about food. I can't eat a couple hours before I fly because I'll throw up on somebody in the plane, and people don't like that. You know, so it's not about eating between meals. I don't eat off of what my plan is. So there's certain times that I have to plan my meals differently depending on changing time zones, flying, if there's something going on at work. When the weather's good, during the summertime and the weather's good, I have a snack before I leave work so that I can go home and walk my dogs and not be starving, and I eat dinner at like 7:30. During the wintertime, when I don't walk my dogs, poor little guys, but it's too darn cold, that snack is eliminated, and then I just go home and have dinner. So it's not about eating between. It's not eating off the time that to plan meals. For me specifically, because it creates a phenomenon of craving, I get a charged up, excited feeling eating at times that I hadn't planned. If you don't get that feeling, there's no reason for you not to do that. Okay? Okay, this one this is on step 10, so I'm going to save that till after I talk about step 10. You have stated that only 20% of OA members experience recovery. Last night, Larry stated 2% of OA members experience recovery. Why would you believe Larry over me? I'm just saying. Please state your sources of information. Was a study done? How do you think an organization can exist that is 80 to 90% ineffective? There is no study. I have to say, it's just my personal experience. That might be Larry's personal experience. I guess the question for you is, what's your personal experience when you go into your meetings? How many people have any type of long-term abstinence, let alone long-term recovery? And, you know, AA kind of shoots out these statistics too. Who cares if it's 2% or 20%? You know, I remember Chris Raymer again. He said one of the issues in AA is that there's a 5% recovery rate, and the 5% are trying to sponsor the 95%, which I thought was an interesting way of looking at it. So it's my observation. If your observation is different, I'm not going to argue with your experience. Could you briefly give an example of a fear inventory to take a particular fear? Now, I did do that yesterday. I took you through a couple of them. So if anyone wants additional information, I'm going to have you talk to me privately because I don't want to take up time with that since I did go over it. Can you comment on sponsoring someone who has a history that is different from your own? Actually, I'm going to leave that because I do talk about that in step 12. Do you encourage your sponsees to practice prayer and meditation or a quiet time before they reach step 11? If not, how else do you encourage? That's a step 11 question. I'm going to answer that in step 11. If you make amends and you relapse, do you have to make amends when you do the steps again? I think that's different. It could be different for different people. But the generality that I'm going to say is if you made an amends to someone and you said, this is what I'm going to do going forward, and you don't do that going forward, you do need to make an amends because you didn't follow through with the amends to begin with. Just for me personally, again, it's not uncommon somebody will make an amends to their children. They will go into relapse, and then they come back through, and like they want to make the amends right away. And I say, you know what, why would your kids believe you this time? Why? You know, so let's, for 30 days, you know what your ideal is. You know what the amends was before. You practice that amends for 30 days, And then after that 30 days, then go back to your children, because now they might believe you because you're behaving differently. But that's just something I personally do. But we have to look what the harm is. If we've continued to make that harm, think about it from your perspective. If somebody said to you, I'm sorry for disrespecting you on a daily basis, and then went back and disrespected you continuously, would you say, well, it's okay, they apologized last month, and you'd be okay with it? I would want someone to make that amends again and say, what I'm going to do differently this time. So if you kind of flip it, think about how you were on the ends of what your actions are. Okay? Roanne? Sure. To you, or are you doing? You have no control over someone else's recovery. You can actually say no. I don't accept it. You can say to them, why would I take an amends from you if you continue to that practice? You know, I mean, I'll just give you one example. A woman at my office who knew I was in a 12-step program and her daughter was an alcoholic, and she came to me and I helped her daughter find a sponsor, and this girl just devastated this woman, and she had kicked her out of the house, and when she kicked her out, her daughter trashed the house and all this kind of stuff. And she came up to me, and this woman was older. She was emphysema. She had a walker with oxygen tanks. And the reason I'm saying that, because she was so upset, and I get nervous when she's upset because her breath gets so scary. And she came, she's like, Kim, I have a question for you. And I'm like, what? She's like, my daughter, she's been doing the steps since March. It's June. Could she be at step 9? And I'm like, well, yeah, why? And she's like, look at this. And it was a post-it that said, Mom, I want to make amends to you. And I said, Dee, well, what's so scary? She's like, it's the 26th of the month. I said, well, what does that mean? She goes, she probably wants rent. And I just thought to myself, we don't know what we do to people. Like this girl, she was so frightened what her daughter was going to do to her. And I said to her, I said, you know what? You don't need to accept her amends. You don't need to see her. Well, will she drink if I don't take it? I said, maybe, maybe not. But it has nothing to do with you. I said, ignore it if that's what you need to do. And if you ever feel like you want to talk to her, then approach her. So it's not our obligation to accept people's amends. You know, and that just so hits me when I think, oh, I don't want to make an amends. That woman was just, she was rocked, absolutely rocked by that. Okay, so we're now going to jump into, last couple pages of step 9 and then go into step 10. And actually, we're going to kind of talk about that in a way. So we go to the bottom of page 82. Last paragraph there. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. God, I remember that. I'm skinny, you should all be happy. You know, he is like the farmer who came out of his cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing? That's kind of what we're talking about. Like, we think just because we did a program of recovery, that maybe we've lost some weight, that maybe we said I'm sorry, that everyone should just be happy for us. That's not recognizing the devastation that we did. And I've just personalized this way. Like I said, I come from this large Irish Catholic family, and I would go there on Thanksgiving, and my cousins would make fun of me, and I would cry, and I'd be so upset. And then in Christmas, we'd get together, and they would be nice and sweet to me as if nothing had happened. And I was so angry. How dare you not recognize how mean you are to me? But yet, isn't that what I'm doing? Like, I'm just going to be a good girl now. Now, this is my opinion again. There is nothing in the big book that says living amends. And I think many of us use that as a loophole. That I'm not going to do a face-to-face amends with you. I'm just going to be a good girl now, and that's enough. If my cousins had come to me and said that I'm sorry that I made fun of you, that would have meant so much to me. So I need to do that. As much as I can do face-to-face, I need to honor that in other people. Now, flipping it around, I think every amends is a living amends. Because if I make that amends and then don't follow through in demonstrating that, which is what the big book says. We have to demonstrate this in all of our affairs. What use is the amends? So the book is saying that we have to acknowledge our wrongs, and then we have to demonstrate how we have changed. At the top of 83, yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it. Next paragraph down, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Our behavior will convince someone more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. You know, I love the saying, your actions are so loud, I cannot hear a word that you're saying. So that's what the whole thing is about, demonstrating. And once again, this is how I personalized a long period of reconstruction. You know, in 2012, when Hurricane Sandy came roaring through New Jersey, I mean, the Jersey Shore does not exist the way it did in 2011. It was devastated, and this was around Halloween. And I remember watching in January the Congress negotiating how much money they should give us and hearing people from the other side of the country saying, it's been 3 months. Why do you need money now? It's over. I mean, it took years and years, and some people still aren't in their homes. You know, it so angered me. So why am I doing that to other people? My God, I treated you like crap for 20 years. Get over it. You know, I've been at the same company for 17 years. I've been recovered for 7. Now, my boss thinks that I had a near-death experience with my ankle because I came back a different person. She didn't know that, in fact, that I had gone through the steps. Okay? I still see her once in a while at a meeting giving me the side eye, waiting to see that girl she knew the first 10 years come back, the one who would stir the pot, the one who would try to cause trouble, that gossip. And that's not who I am now. But she only has 7 years experience of me this way and 10 years experience of me another way. I remember a few years back, I lost my temper with this guy in another department, and my boss came out and said, oh my God, I said, I can't believe I lost my temper with Larry. And she looked at me and she goes, wow, Kim, that doesn't happen much anymore. And that anymore was loud. Because that's what I had to realize that. That's just a work relationship. That's not like a mother, father, brother, sister, boyfriend, girlfriend. I mean, it's just, we have to be consistent in that. Just as do the same thing with, when I'm sponsoring someone, I don't care what they say. I look at what they do. You might tell me you want to go to any length, and then your actions are saying you're only going to do what's convenient. So I have to remember that not only as I'm going through it, but I see that so many times when I'm sponsoring people. So now we're going to get into step 10. We're going to go to page 84. But before we do that, I have another reading. So someone had pointed this out to me. It's an article by William Duncan Silkworth. I don't know when it was written, but it was years after AA had started to gain some respectability. And it's called Slips and Human Nature, which I like to call relapse. I hate that word, slip. So I'm just going to read some excerpts from it. It says, a slip is a relapse. It is a relapse that occurs after the alcoholic has stopped drinking and started on the AA program of recovery. Relapse usually occur in the early states of the alcohol. Well, I don't want to read that. Let me see. I'm going to just summarize it because I don't want to take time with it. But basically what he says is he's kind of surprised how people are surprised by the fact that addicts relapse. He said alcoholism is like any other disease. If someone has diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and they stop taking the treatment, they stop taking their pills, they stop doing their activity level they need to do, and their blood pressure goes through the roof, they have a diabetic episode, maybe go into a diabetic coma, their cholesterol goes through the roof. Nobody is surprised, and nobody says what a bad person they are. They just recognize they didn't take their treatment and they had a relapse into that whatever that disease is. He said, in alcoholism, when someone relapses, people think it's poor moral character, and they condemn the people for doing it. But from our perspective is, why would we think we wouldn't relapse if we stopped taking our treatment? Our treatment is the 12 steps. You know, my brother's diabetic. I would think he's insane if he decided not to take his insulin on a regular basis. Or if he decided that since his sugar is good, maybe I'll only take my insulin every other day. That's nuts. But how many of us, and I'll give you an example, I have never woken up on a Monday after a really good binge on a Sunday and said, "Whew, I'm good till Thursday." I had to binge every day. How many of us get up on a Monday, maybe even it'll be tomorrow, "Whew, that retreat was awesome. I think I'm good on spiritual work till Thursday." And then we're wondering why we're tumbling in the food. So I like the fact that he equates it with any other disease. If I do not take my treatment, I will relapse just the way any other person with another disease will relapse. So 1 through 9 taught us a skill set. Now we're getting into what the daily treatment of this disease is. So I'm just going to give my personal experience with this. As I start to clean up my step 9s and I start practicing my step 10s, my step 9s start to decrease because now I have a skill set that interrupts that mind process before I cause harm. As I start to dig into my step 11 and make that a regular practice, my step 10s start to decrease because I'm not getting disturbed as much. But I also unravel the same exact way. As I let up on my step 11s, my step 10s start to pop up because now I'm getting disturbed. And as I let up on my step 10s, my harms and my step 9s start to pop up because now I'm starting to cause harm again. So this is a progressive recovery, the same way I experience a progressive illness. So step 10, I see in 3 different sections. We're going to have instructions, we're going to have promises, and we're going to have warnings. So let's look at the instructions first. So on page 84, the second full paragraph, this thought brings us to step 9. So what's the thought? The thought is step 1 through 9. This, yeah, brings us to 10. It is understanding that skill set of 4 through 9. Which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. What I often see is people wanting to finish all their step 9s before they do step 10. If that was true, I wouldn't have started step 10 yet. I told you I couldn't find my college roommate. I'm not done my amends yet. So it's saying we vigorously commenced. I got to get into this skill set right away, just like we talked about with the nurse. The nurse, that skill set she learns in college doesn't have any depth and weight until she's in a hospital and she starts using that on a regular basis. That's what step 10 is. Step 4 through 9, we had the luxury of looking at the last 30, 40 years. Step 10 is the jerk's right in front of me right now. What do I do? It's a real time 4 through 9. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. I often heard that these are the maintenance steps. The big book is telling us it's the growth steps. And think about it. How could you implement 4 through 9 on a daily basis and not grow? You know, who I was when I recovered is totally different than who I am now and hopefully be very different than I am 2 years from now. And for me, personalizing again, understanding and effectiveness, understanding is I am always going to be the student. I'm always seeking a new understanding with this step work, a new understanding. That's why I'm a big podcast person. I'm always trying to find new speakers I can listen to that'll give me a new perspective on this work. Because every time I open up this book, the words become alive again because I'm in a different part of my recovery. And my effectiveness is how am I carrying the message? I'm being the teacher. So the way I look at it is I have to be the student and the teacher every single day in order to grow in this understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter, so we're going to continue to grow for this. It should continue for a lifetime. So here's the instructions. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. There's step 4. And it says watch, not work on. So we're watching for these defects. When they crop up, because we're humans, right? We ask God at once to remove them. There's 6 and 7. We discuss them with someone immediately, step 5. We make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone, steps 8 and 9. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone else, someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So we learn in step three, the problem is me. So what are they saying? Do the skill set and think about somebody else. And I don't think it just means OA. You know, if I'm at work, I'm asking a coworker, how can I help you? If I'm in traffic, I'm letting someone in who normally I would cut off. If I go to the pharmacy on the way home, I ask someone how they're doing. Now, that'll scare the heck out of most people at the register because they're not used to being acknowledged. But I, you know, if I park and somebody's carrying their groceries in, I offer to help them carry their groceries in. Get my mind off of me. Now, you notice it doesn't go 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It goes 4, 6, 7, 5, 8, 9. Because, see, we're connected with God now, right? We're unblocked. So I can go directly to my higher power. There's a woman I really respect in OA that she told me she does this, and I was like, whew. Someone calls her for a 10th step, and she says, did you look at where you're selfish, dishonest, resentful, and fearful? No, I just need to talk. Did you go to God and ask him to remove it? No, I just need to talk. Call me back in 10 minutes when you do the work.
Wow.
I thought, woo!
Is that rude?
Yup. And but that's the skill set. I'm supposed to be doing this work before I go to another human being. Now, here again is my opinion. I believe immediately in 1939 is very different than immediately in 2018. They did not have texting. They did not have Facebook. They did not have Twitter. I think they mean don't sit on it. I personally did not want to limit my 10 steps to when I could physically talk to somebody. So what I personally did, and this was before I had a smartphone, where's my smartphone, is I would take index cards to work, and I am someone that goes to the bathroom a lot. So every time I went to the bathroom, I would take an index card in the bathroom, and I would put SDRF, selfish, dishonest, resentful, fearful, and I would write down where I was feeling. So I would get to work at 8 o'clock feeling good. I would go to the bathroom at 9:30 and think, holy crap, I have been in all four of those in the last half, in the hour and a half. Now, why it was helpful for me personally is anxiety was very normal to me. I could not tell when I was disturbed. So by doing this and doing them every half hour, in a couple hours, I was seeing my disturbances that I don't think I would have seen if I was quote-unquote waiting to see it. And I would call people and I would say, can I call you tonight at 7 o'clock with some 10 steps? And then I would do my index cards and I would call that person at night and review those cards. One of the best advice I got when I graduated college, because I was a really shy kid, was the counselor said, Kim, go on a bunch of interviews for jobs that you don't want, so that when you go on the interview for the job that you do want, you're going to feel comfortable with that skill set. That's what I did with my 10 step. I needed to practice this skill set so when my back was really up against the wall, I felt comfortable with that skill set. Once again, my opinion. I suggest to my sponsees they get a group of around 5 to 7 people that they feel comfortable doing this skill set with. Because you don't know who's going to be available. And look for someone who's going to be honest with you and can bring you to the book. If you call someone and they tell you, don't worry about it, honey, take a bubble bath. Great person to talk to, probably not a good person to do a 10 step with. Or if they call you and start yelling at you and telling you what to do, the whole point of a 10 step is to get you to God. Maybe not the right person for you. So it's going to take you a while to find that village that's going to support you. And I have to tell you, mine has changed over the years. As I grow in understanding and effectiveness, I have a 10-step buddy who doesn't know she's a 10-step buddy. And it's my best friend from when I grew up. Because I call her and I tell her where I'm selfish, dishonest, resentful, and fearful. And since she's known me since I'm 9, she calls me on my crap. You know, and I'm having a lot of difficulties with work, and my friend's a very professional woman and high up in a company, and she can really give me some good practical advice. So build up that skill set, but you need to practice it. Just one other thing I thought was interesting when this word immediately, and I see all these formats of all these different 10 steps. And once again, whatever gives you freedom, utilize that format. But I was in an AA meeting, and I asked about this immediately thing and these formats, and it was a guy and a woman. And the guy, Chris, said, Kim, I got to tell you, he said, I think this is more a Mars and Venus thing than I think it is, you know, a 10-step thing. He said, I'll tell you my average 10-step from one of my guys. hey, Chris, I've been a self-centered bastard. Cool, dude. Go to God. And Amber's like, no, we have this format, and we discussed this, and we find out that, because that's what women do, we talk about stuff. Men's best friends are someone they sit at a basketball game or a football game, and they don't talk, but that's the best bonding experience they have. We have to go to the mall and talk 14 hours, and if we meet, if it's more than a week, we feel like, they don't love me anymore. So there's really, I think it's interesting, because it isn't, a lot of times it can be like a Mars and Venus thing. I tend to be more masculine in the sense that I don't like those long formulas. You know, I need help right away. I don't have time to sit on the phone for 45 minutes to take a 10th step or to give a 10th step. But if that's what works for you and that's what brings you freedom, you're going to seek out people that have that same mindset. And that's why I think it's really good to keep practicing that skill set. Okay? So let's go on to these problems. Yeah.
Can I ask one quick question? If you've done something wrong in your past and profusely apologize to the person when it happened, do you go back and make an amend to them again?
You know what's so cool? I have no idea. What you have to do is the work. You have to go back and do, you know, you do your 10 step on it. And if you don't have resolution, you go back and you do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Until
God tells you what to do. You're going to be called to what God tells you to do. I have no idea what you have to do. Whew, is that freedom?
Yeah.
You know, we're going to talk about sponsoring later, but I understand now why I only could sponsor two people, because I had to figure that out for her. My job now as a sponsor is to teach you the steps so you can find that out for yourself. I can sponsor 10 people easily because I'm not managing people's lives today. You know? I love saying I don't know. I love it. It's going to be different for everyone, and the question for the mic is, how do you take a 10 step? That's why I think you have to find your tribe of people. I immediately tell them to go into that fourth column. To me, the first three columns are what we were told is that we continue to stay sore. So I'll tell someone, they say, work. Okay, that's enough. I don't even know what happened at work. Where am I selfish, dishonest, resentful, fearful? Huh, that sounds an awful lot like what you told me about your husband last week. Where do you owe an amends? And I find for myself that it winds up being the same crap. I have a couple plays, and I just invite different actors on stage. You know, it's usually, you know, two extremes is, don't they know who I am? So, oh my God, they know I'm a piece of crap. Or, oh, I'm going to be laughed at. So often what happens with me, because I've been doing them for years now, is I don't even need to talk to somebody. Because okay, God, here I go again. Here I'm arrogant. Here I'm feeling less than. Take it from me. Thank you. I need to go on with the rest of my day. And then when I do my 11th step, which we're going to talk about, if I see that same play is popping up over and over again, I know I need to call another person because I'm not seeing something because I'm not getting relief and that is popping up over again. But my personal thing is I get them to look at that first column, the fourth column, ask them to make sure they're asking God to remove them, see if there's any amends, and tell me who you're going to help. I keep it real. My average 10 step is like 5 to 10 minutes. You know, and some people think I'm mean because of that. And that's why they won't call me again. And they're going to find people that do the 10th step where they feel comfortable with it. So now we have these promises. And, you know, I still get a little, not resentful, but I wish these were the promises that we read at the end of the meetings instead of the 9th step promises. Because honestly, I didn't come to Overeaters Anonymous to be free, you know, have my fear of economic insecurity leave me. And you can see I didn't even go over the 9th step promises. I came here to stop eating. I came here because I didn't want food to rule my life. And my personal belief is I don't think a lot of people in OA think these are possible. So why would you read something you don't think is attainable? So it says here, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. See, alcohol is even an afterthought. It's an afterthought at this point. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. Not never. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. What that meant for me was I always was trying to control the food, And when I started to, when I had the food down and started to focus on the solution, all once in a while I would turn around and go, huh, I haven't thought of food in a week. I haven't thought of food in 2 weeks. I haven't thought of food in 3 weeks. So it felt automatic because my focus wasn't on trying to control it. It was going to that solution, and the food being an afterthought just became part of that rearview mirror. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without effort or thought on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it nor avoiding temptation. You know, I don't have to avoid people, places, and things today. I don't have to avoid my triggers. I can fully participate in life. You know, I used to think that a program of attraction was because I happened to have gotten down to a size 4. I bought blonde hair. I bought green eyes. I am a, you know, I'm a program of attraction. But yet I couldn't go to a wedding. I was so nasty to waiters and waitresses because I knew they were trying to poison me. You know, I couldn't go to events. How attractive was I really being? You know, the fact that I go into a situation and I can be free around the food and I'm open to people about why I can't eat certain things, that's when people ask me, well, you know, even a lot of times it's for their family members, wait a minute, what do you mean? Like, because that's what's attractive. The attractiveness is that we can participate in life to the fullest and not let this disease control us. I was a slave to the food while I was abstinent as much as I was a slave to the food when I was in the food. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We were never even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That really hits me. I was either like, you know, I'm a size 4 and everyone should do what I do and like, you know, you don't have to eat like I eat and like, or I was like, oh my God, I'm one bite away, I'm one bite away, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, there's a commercial on TV and it's showing McDonald's, oh my God, oh my God. Like it was, that is the way I lived. Like I said, abstinent or not abstinent, today I'm not cocky or afraid. Here's the kicker though. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. You know, I remember in my 20s, I'm an exercise bulimic. Like, I could go on vacation and come back and do the same exact exercise that I did at 50, 51. If I stop doing exercises, you know, I'm going to have to build up again to whatever my routine is. You know, someone doesn't run a marathon in November and then decide to run it in January and not run between that time. They have to remain in fit physical condition in order to continue to do what they want to do. It's the same thing with us. You know, one of my spiritual mentors, I remember her saying this on one of her talks and blew my mind. She said, to remain physically fit, we have to move. And to remain spiritually fit, we have to get still. And in my meditation room, I have my elliptical machine right next to my my meditation chair. So it's like, it just I love that balance of the two. Now here comes the warnings. It is easy to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. I always thought that people relapsed because something bad happened. I am finding more and more that people relapse because life is going well. And if life is going well, who needs God? I got it. I'm getting what I want. Resting on your laurels means resting on your past achievements. Another AA speaker I love, he said, if the only thing I have to share in a meeting is a spiritual experience from 3 years ago, I'm screwed. I need a current spiritual experience if I want to stay well. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. So for all those people to get all twisted about recovered meeting cured, we are not cured. I am recovered from my ankle injury, and I am recovered from being a compulsive overeater. I am not under the delusion that I am not a compulsive overeater, and I don't have an ankle injury. What we have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. I talked about this yesterday. This is the first time the big book talks about one day at a time. We have a daily reprieve. I talked to you about being Cinderella. Every day I wake up untreated, but every day I get to go to the ball, as long as I continue to do the spiritual work. Every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. What I love to do in my step 11 is I like to take parts of other parts of the text and use it as my step 11 meditation. This is often one I use every day. Am I doing it every day? Or am I taking weekends off? Maybe only thinking Monday, Wednesday, Friday is good enough. Am I carrying Kim's vision? or God's vision? And into all of my activities, where do I think that God can't help me? Where do I think I need to have control over my life? Romance and finance is the two big ones that often you see. I got this. And that's exactly where that mental twist is going to come in and get us. These thoughts must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line. All we wish is the proper use of the will. So we're talking about turning our will over in step three, right? I now know how to do this. I turn my will over by doing 10 and 11. And when I'm in alignment with God, God's given me my will back. Pretty cool. But I have to keep it in alignment with my higher power if I want to stay well. So that's all we have for step 10, and we have 20 minutes for step 11. And I wanted to read you, I need my phone. You know, I get really twisted sometime when I do these things because I get scared. I get scared I'm going to disappoint you. I get scared that the Kim G from South Jersey personality, that you're, you know, you have these expectations because for 3 minutes I can hold it together, and when you're going to see me for 20 hours a day, you're going to realize I can't hold it together. And this is, I keep this in my phone because I love this quote. But I want to say this to you too, because you guys are going to have an experience, and I don't want you to be small in that experience. Overeaters Anonymous needs to see recovery. They need to see what this program do for us. So this quote from a book I love just reminds me of what we have to do. So it says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure about around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us. It is in every one of us. And as we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So as we get into step 11, I'm asking you guys to go home and shine. Even if you've got your abstinence today, go and shine what you learned today. Share your experience. Show them that you know it's possible that you can recover. Don't play small in Overeaters Anonymous because your meetings might be a little bit uncomfortable with that. Because a lot of meetings support disease and not recovery. And we don't want to rock the boat. So shine on, people. Okay. I will give you that afterward, after the recording's off. Okay. So now we're going to go on to step 11. So I'm going to kind of summarize some stuff for time. So often I'll get someone that calls me and says, you know, they're not saying any words, but they're telling me they're restless, irritable, discontent. And I'll say, well, where are you in the steps? And they say, well, I'm living 10, 11, and 12, because that's a really popular saying. And I'll say to them, okay, well, what does that look like on a daily basis? And a lot of people can't even describe 10, 11, and 12, let alone are doing it. But often what I get is I do a nightly review for my step 10. I say prayers in the morning for my step 11, and I have three sponsees that I'm taking their food. That is not steps 10, 11, and 12. We just learned step 10 is throughout the day when we're disturbed, we're getting rid of that disturbance. Step 11 is actually three practices. It's an evening routine, which not just OA, I think a lot of AA meetings think that the nightly review is step 10, it's step 11. It is a morning routine, and it's pausing throughout the day. So if you don't have all three routines going on, you're not doing step 11. Saying the Serenity Prayer 14 times is not step 11. You know, saying even your own religious practice prayers is not step 11. You know, the way that I talk about this is my step work is the skeleton of my life. It is what supports everything else. And that allows me to enjoy my other spiritual practices. And as we get into step 11, we're connected with God. I tell my sponsees, call people. See what books they're reading outside of OA. See what spiritual practices they have. This is when people get into transcendental meditation. They get into yoga. I don't know if you guys know Julie R. from California. She does American Indian drumming. I think that's so freaking cool. I've sponsored Buddhists who do the chanting, which I think is really cool. Like, you know, what are those spiritual practices other people are doing? But understand that's in addition to, not in lieu of. So I need to keep these practices to keep me open to the other practices that I get depth and weight from. So at night, when I do this nightly review, which is on the top of page 86, basically, what I think of as the nightly review is I'm doing 4 through 9 over the last 24/7 hours. So I'm looking for those patterns in my day the same way in step 5 I looked at the patterns of my life. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And you're taking 4 through 9. So it says, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? So there's our fourth column again in step 4. Do we owe an apology? Steps 8 and 9. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Says our step 5. Were we kind and loving towards all? Now I have to tell you, if someone sends me their step 11 and they say yes to that more than 3 days, I call them on that. Because there's no way. And often when I say, well, no, I was nice to people, I'm like, what was going on in your head? Ooh, does that count? We have learned the most dangerous part of our disease is in our mind. So if our thoughts in our head are F you, but we're saying have a nice day, that is not being kind and loving towards all. I am excited when I can say 60%. What could we have done better? Now here's the difference. I mentioned it briefly yesterday. The difference for me between step 10 and step 11 with this review is what could I have done better and what corrective measures should be taken. So a few years into recovery, when I wasn't really sure what that was, someone talked to me about these ideals. If I'm creating these ideals, once again, all these prayers we've learned, they're part of our practice. We're not leaving the third step prayer in step 3. We're not leaving the seven step prayer in step 7. So I've created these ideals. So I look at, okay, I saw my mother today. How was my behavior that I did today in relation to my ideal as a daughter? And that difference is what could I have done better? And the corrective measures is what can I do differently tomorrow? That has changed my recovery. Absolutely changed my recovery. Because if I am only doing this as a checklist of what I did wrong today, then what's going to change? It's going to be Groundhog's Day. Over and over and over. And it says here, constructively review my day. This is not about beating ourselves up. This is not, which is, you know, my thing was like, well, okay, I'll just write, if I did 20 things wrong and 10 things right, then I'm a piece of crap. No. We're learning how to be, I hate the word better people, but we're learning to be more in alignment with our higher power. So that's what happens at night. In the morning, I think of it more being a proactive step 11. See, because I know what's going to trip me up now, right? I'm selfish, I'm dishonest, I'm self-seeking, I'm frightened. Why do I have to wait till that happens to ask for God's help? On the bottom of 86, where it says upon awakening, the second, I'm just going to pick out sentences and not tell you where they are, so it's just easier for me. So they call this the divorce prayer. It says, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. So I like that word divorce, because what do we divorce? Something we once loved, right? I loved my selfishness. I loved my dishonesty, but now I know it's killing me. So I'm asking God to separate it. And remember that word ask is a prayer. So every time we see that word ask in here, think about that. That's a prayer. If we go down towards the end of that page, we relax and take it easy, we don't struggle. How many people have heard that? That's a common saying you hear in the rooms, right? I was in a meeting and one of the guys said, okay, hold up. What's the sentence say before it? Sentence before it is, we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision. If we don't do that, don't take it easy. Don't relax because you're going to be struggling. So I love when someone takes something I hear in the rooms out of context and puts it in the context of the big book. I'm asking God into all these. At the top of page 87, it says, being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption with all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. I know how to be 7 years abstinent. I don't know how to be 8 years abstinent. I'm always inexperienced. I always like to use a mother. You find out you're pregnant for the first time and you're scared to death because you don't know what it's like to be a mother. And that baby is born and you start to feel comfortable with an infant and that damn thing turns into a toddler. And then you're like, oh my God, I have no idea how to handle a toddler. And you start to feel comfortable with the toddler and then they're going off to kindergarten and you're wrecked. How do I handle my kid going off to kindergarten? And then they become a tween and a teenager and then they're leaving for college and now they're getting married. So even though you've been a mother for decades maybe, you're constantly inexperienced because your child is always changing. So I'm always going to be inexperienced in step 11 because my life is constantly changing. Once again, with me traveling, this is like so far out of my wheelhouse, and I learn something every single time, and every single time I learn more and more what I don't know. And I love that, you know, we will pay for this presumption with all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. So when I screw up, when I'm in absurd actions and ideas, I think, okay, I'm practicing step 11. That's what I'm doing. I don't beat myself up. I use it as a learning experience. I'll just tell you one funny one for me. I'm a single woman, and I, you know, years ago when all those 50 Shades of Grey books were out, and I'm a big reader in general, but I mean, I went through those books really, really fast. And I was in a coffee shop doing some homework for grad school, and I was on Facebook, and I happened to see a boyfriend from like 25 years ago. And I Facebooked him. And then I said, God's will be done. And I'm like, that wasn't God's will. That was 50 Shades of Grey, baby. I was like, I'm looking for a booty call on Facebook, you know? And then the scary thing was I only looked at his page after I Facebooked him. And apparently 25 years that I changed, he changed a little too. And I'm like, okay, God, protect me from this guy. I'm like, oh my God. But I can laugh at it. I can laugh at it. Okay. And then the last part we're going to go over is as we pause throughout the day. And I have to tell you, for me personally, step 11 pausing has kind of melded into step 10. They've kind of been the same thing. What I find for myself is the more that I pause, which to me is taking my spiritual temperature, the less disturbed I get. So I really lean into that part of step 11, which really kind of dissipates my disturbing step 10s that I have to do. So at the bottom of page 87, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. Now notice it doesn't ask for the right emotion because I'm always asking to feel good. And what have we learned consistently over this? It is my thoughts and my actions that are my problem, and that's what I'm asking God into. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. Why is that? Because I'm constantly trying to run the show. And here comes what I call this the 11-step promises on the top of 88. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. So if I focus on my step 11 work and thoughts and actions, my emotions just start to dissipate. I'm not on that roller coaster all day. I'm much more even. And I love how it says excitement, because for an addict like me, extreme highs is just as dangerous as extreme lows. So I start to even out. It says here, we become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. So that to me is a, kind of like that spiritual, you know, barometer again. If I'm feeling inefficient and I'm exhausted, it's usually an indication that I'm in Kim's will. So I get quiet with God and ask how I can be more efficient and not tire so easily. So we mentioned this yesterday, but this is once again is that subtleness of the idea of me setting boundaries, which is out of self-will, and me getting inspiration from a higher power. So I'll give you one example. I was just absolutely exhausted, and I just could not figure out how to set boundaries. And I got quiet with God. Now, my God curses, just so you know. And I heard clear as day, get off your fucking iPad. Because I was playing Best Fiends and Candy Crush till like 2 o'clock in the morning. And that's why I was so exhausted. So with God, I said, okay, all electronics are off at 11 o'clock. Now, someone might say I set that boundary, but for me, it just gets much more authentic when I ask my higher power how I can be more efficient. It's the same thing with sponsoring. Do I take on a new sponsee? What am I going to do with this? Do I go to this speaking engagement? Get quiet. God, I want to be efficient. I want to be not tired. Tell me whether I need to take this person on, and if I can, what are those parameters around that? You know, one of the things with flying is that it's elevation. Why I didn't understand this when I accepted this one, but it's the takeoff and the landings. So I have to be upfront that if I can't get a direct flight somewhere, I can't take the speaking engagement because I know that I will be sick, and I will not be useful to people if I come at that point. And I feel bad about it, and I feel guilty about it, and I get into step 11, and I'm like, okay, God, the point isn't that I say yes to everything I'm asked. The point is I want to be useful to people once I'm there. So this part of this step 11 is just so huge to me. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we just outlined. So we're going to talk about this in step 12, but it's not about me disciplining my sponsees anymore. Disciplines I think I told you, when I get Christian terms in a different way, I love it. And someone pointed out to me, you know, Jesus has 12 disciples. Well, what's the origin of disciples? It's discipline. So I feel like I'm a disciple of the 12 steps. And I'm only a disciple of the 12 steps if I'm doing the disciplines of the 12 steps. So I am being disciplined by a higher power. I'm not disciplined by a sponsor at this point. And how am I being disciplined the way we just outlined? The way we just outlined is the 12 steps. Now, for me personally, too, I can be overly disciplined. Okay, brother, I'll do it. Someone had pointed out to me that Jesus has 12 disciples. And the origin of the word disciples is disciplines. So if I am a disciple of the 12 steps, I need to be working the discipline of the 12 steps. So, well, let's see the undisciplined part. Okay, so just to give you an example, I'm someone that, I'm an accountant, so black, white, debits equals credits, life is better when it's on a spreadsheet. I'm very overly disciplined. So this was years before, even before I was doing the big book, and I gravitated towards OA sects that were very disciplined because I felt comfortable in that. And my sponsor at the time said, Kim, you need to be more spontaneous. I mean, I had a spreadsheet of like when I took a shower in the morning and all this kind of stuff. And she's like, you need to be more spontaneous. You need to loosen up a little bit. So I prayed about it, and I called her back the next night because I talked to her daily. And I said, Mary, you're absolutely right. On Thursday, I'm going to be spontaneous. And she goes, you have no idea what you said, did you? I'm like, So for me personally, part of the discipline with God is to become undisciplined to a certain extent. That I can, like I said, I planned my outfits here more than I planned what I'm going to say to you. You know, that it's hard for me not to pack 2 weeks before a trip because I get so anxious about it. You know, I was the kind of kid that I would hand in my book report 2 weeks before it was due. Not because I'm really that good of a student, but my anxiety was so high, I couldn't not do it 2 weeks ahead of time. I am so happy when I don't have to do that today, that I trust that I'm going to get someplace. I don't have to go on MapQuest and talk to my GPS and all that stuff to figure out, you know, maybe I'll just get there. I used to drive places 2 and 3 times before I was supposed to go someplace because my anxiety was so high I would be late. I am proud when I go into a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous late because I'm someone, if I'm 1 minute late, I would turn around and not go. So we have to know what our things is, and we're going to ask God into it. It says, but this is not all. There is action and more action. I swear to God, they keep telling you we're done a step, but then they tell you it's action and more action. Like, it's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. And we will resume in 10 minutes, I'm not sure what time it is, with step 12. Thanks.